John Clark, and we're talking about Pete Townshend, listed by AOL Music as the number 5 songwriter in the history of rock. Now, let me just finish up about Tommy, John. The other thing it strikes me about Tommy was that the way it's placed in time. Now, we've already said that The Who followed The Stones and The Beatles, so they learned a lot from those two bands. But they certainly broke new ground with Tommy. Pete Townshend was writing Tommy, I assume, while the Beatles were writing Sgt. Pepper. Maybe it was slightly after. But
well, let's see. When did Tommy come out?
69. Early 69.
Right.
March of 69. And Sgt. Pepper was 67. But you have to believe Townshend was working on that a long time.
Well, he's a very meticulous and painstaking and actually quite slow songwriter.
It's a double album.
Yeah. Well, it just takes him a long time.
And he's the only one writing. He doesn't have a Lennon to compliment a McCartney.
Well, and there's just different personalities when it comes to songwriting, too. The Beatles were able to churn out wonderful music at an amazing pace. But many songwriters just simply can't do that for one reason or another. And as I said, Pete Townshend is a very slow and painstaking writer because, for one thing, he's such an incredible perfectionist. You know, every word has to operate just the way he wants it to operate.
Well, I think that's true. And I also think when you write by yourself, it's a different ballgame because you don't have somebody to feed off. You move at your own pace, and sometimes that is slow.
And remember, too, that he's writing all the parts and recording them himself.
Yeah, that's right. Well, anyway, so Tommy comes out, and for a couple of years, that's all they perform in concert. And, of course, The Who's performance at Woodstock is what brought them to true international prominence.
Right.
Pete Townshend always said they were lucky. I think they went on about 3 a.m. and finished at dawn. And just as the sun was coming up, they finished Tommy. And they played it in its entirety, and the crowd, I mean, it was a magical moment for the crowd. Townshend always swore he hated Woodstock. And he never talked about it nostalgically the way most people do.
But nonetheless, their performance was a classic.
It was, and while some of that is on the Woodstock Live album, of course, the classic performance, before we get to Who's Next, the 1971 album, the classic live Who performance came out in 1970, and it's called Live at Leeds.
That's a phenomenal album. I remember when I was in, high school, I guess, they used to do a thing on WKQQ, which was the FM station, 100,000-watt FM station here, called Fantasy Park, and it may have been a syndicated thing, I don't know, but they would, for an entire day, 24 hours at a time, they would play nothing but live music, or live recordings, and kind of bill it and pitch it, present it as a virtual live concert. And I remember when I heard the entire Live at Leeds presented that way, I thought, this is one of the best things I have ever heard in my life. And to this day, I still believe that.
Well, and of course, if you look at a list of the 10 greatest live albums in the history of rock, Live at Leeds is always there near the top.
Right, right. Oh, I remember being knocked out by, I was a bass player. I was in high school learning to play the bass, hoping to be a rock and roll player, and just thinking, gosh, that's one of the best bass players I've ever heard.
Well, and this is a good time to stop and talk about the way the music meshes for The Who, because The Who is unique in a couple of ways musically, besides Townshend's writing ability. John Entwistle plays lead bass much of the time, both on albums and live, and Pete Townshend, rather than play lead guitar, complements it with rhythm guitar, and it's not like he's sitting there strumming. The term power chords was invented to describe his style of guitar playing.
Yeah. Yeah, and also John Entwistle was one of the first people to break out of the bass player mode and be an absolutely integral part. Of course, you can put Paul McCartney in that category. And you can put John Paul Jones of Led Zeppelin in that category, too. But definitely something different, even from the way that bass players play today. The vast majority of bass players lay around the root of the chord and provide the foundation, but the best bass players are guys who play all the way up and down the neck of the guitar and contribute melodically to the structure of the song.
Well, and Entwistle had extremely long fingers, because I've seen him in concert a number of times, many times, and close up, and his fingers just bounce off, both his hands, the fingers on both his hands just bounce off the strings. I can't even tell what he's doing half the time, because they're never standing still, you know. He is an amazing bass player, and I guess this is not a bad time to bring this up, but because The Who is my favorite band, the case I'm going to make to you tonight and have you as a musician and as someone who's not as rabid about The Who, bring me back to earth a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I would argue that The Who has, if you were to, like the BCS for college football, if you were to rate every member of The Who in terms of where they rank in terms of the best at their position, The Who ends up the number one band because of that. And the reason I'll start with is I think you can make the case that John Entwistle is the greatest bass player in the history of rock.
Let me think about that.
Yeah, I'm fine with dissent, of course. In fact, I want you to provide me several other names of people who would contend for that title.
Well, you know, I mean, there's so many different ways to evaluate any kind of player.
Yeah, that's true.
Including bass players. We in our conversation pre-show, we talked about Neil Young being ranked as a very highly as a guitar player when he's not technically proficient, but I noted to you that he sure makes every note count. He can lay on one note and make it sound great. So there's a lot of different ways to look at it.
Who are your favorite bass players?
Well, my favorite bass players when I was in my formative years included Chris Squire, who is, nobody could argue with the fact that he is technically as proficient as everybody, as anybody who ever played.
Chris Squire of Yes, of course.
Yes.
Now, I'm fine with that, except I saw him in concert in the 70s, and he showed up in thigh-high red boots, and that turned me off, I got to tell you.
Well, he's a theatrical guy. Actually, I saw him. I've seen Yes in concert three times, and once I saw him run across the stage and hit one of those athletic springboards and turn a somersault in the air while playing bass.
Really?
So, yeah. So that's pretty theatrical, I'll have to
say. I would never have predicted that of him, for whatever reason.
Well, he used to be skinny.
Well, not because of that so much as I just never thought of that as his style.
Yeah, I've seen fish.
I've seen Fish jump up and down on trampolines, small trampolines on stage. And my very first Who concert, as they come out on stage, Keith Moon did a somersault across the stage and then jumped up on his drum kit.
Is that right?
Yes. But that's different than jumping up and doing a somersault in midair playing the bass.
Yeah, he did. I was amazed. But anyway, so my formative bass players were Chris Squire. And then on the jazz side, Jaco Pastorius, who played in Weather Report. You know, if we want to talk about sheer talent and technical ability, there are all kinds of wonderful bass players in the world, and many of whom most people have never heard of. But John Entwistle had the ability to completely drive the tune at the same time he was contributing structurally, you know, one of the most integral parts of the songs. And so that's a unique talent. And
well,
I'll have to say that I put him right well up there.
Yeah, yeah.
But then again, there's Paul McCartney, who is the guy who defined melodic bass playing.
Well, also, I mean, McCartney did he blazed so many trails because nobody had done what he did before.
Mm-hmm.
And Entwistle would have learned from that.
But you can't pick out one guy from The Who and say that they're absolutely the best player, because the thing about The Who is it's such a complete unit. And it was the fact that you have these guys playing at such a high level and doing it together within the structure of the songs that Pete Townsend wrote that makes them. It's not just their playing ability, but it's the context of the song, and it's their ability to play with each other.
Yeah, there's no question.
It makes them all so good.
there's no question that it's not, that it's the mix together. Well, and let me not get caught up with trying to say someone is the best, but I'm going to argue that Entwistle is in the top five.
And he's a French horn player.
In rock, that's right. He arranged the horns for the Who albums and played them in some of the Who albums.
And how many times have you seen a bass player pick up a French horn and play?
Not often.
On stage.
Well, I never saw Entwistle pick up a French horn and play on stage.
Oh, he's done it, though.
No, I don't think he has.
Oh, I remember seeing video of...
They began taking a horn section along after Keith Moon died, which means 82, maybe, was the first time. But they had a separate section, and he arranged them, but I don't believe I ever saw John Entwistle play horn on stage.
I have seen video of...
Well, let's not get caught up in that.
Okay, all right.
Let me move on and say that you have to say Entwistle is one of the top five bass players.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then I have to say that Keith Moon is one of the top five drummers.
Well, as I mentioned to you before, he defines thunderous drumming for me. And of course, you know, my opinion is it hardly matters, but I think that you will find that most drummers agree that Keith Moon is one of the best ever.
Yeah, and it isn't just his speed. I know I've told you this story before, but when I saw the Quadrophenia tour in 1973, when The Who was a quartet, that is Roger Daltrey singing and a trio playing two guitars and drums, they didn't bring along a keyboard player because they were a foursome.
Mm-hmm.
But Townsend by then was writing things with synthesizer pieces, Who's Next had come out, which we haven't talked about yet, but mm-hmm. it came out, and then Quadrophenia had synthesizer pieces. And so they needed that to fill out the sound. And so they brought backing tracks along, and they played a backing track and still performed as a quartet.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
what do you think about that?
Well, I was surprised when they did it, and yet I think what it was is they weren't willing to change their concept of what the band was on stage. Now, in many ways, when Keith Moon died in 1978, that freed the band to pursue another approach. And so after that, Townsend brought a keyboard player along, and they didn't have to have the stuff taped already, the backing track of the synthesizer pieces.
Well, I like that a lot better. I like having live players.
I do, too. I hate the lip-syncing thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
No, they weren't lip-syncing. But you do like to see it live. But on the Quadrophenia tour, what surprised me, because they only used backing tracks on two songs from Who's Next, right? Baba O'Reilly, what people call Teenage Wasteland, and Won't Get Fooled Again, the greatest rock anthem for my money in history. And for Dr. Jimmy, a piece from Quadrophenia. Otherwise, they didn't need the backing tracks. What surprised me most about Keith Moon's performance, besides the fact he had about 20 drums up there and was going a mile a minute, was he must have had a dozen cymbals. And when the Who was our masters at the transition, they go from this high-energy three-chord rock to the orchestral rock, where they get melodic. And many of Pete Townsend's songs, and I think this is what makes him a better songwriter than the Jagger Richards approach, is they'll often start with it sounds like it's going to be a ballad in the beginning, and then they go hard rock, and then they go to sing a verse again or an interlude, or they end with an interlude that's a slow piece. And that transition from hard rock to ballad, The Who does it masterfully, and the transition from three-chord rock, basic rock and roll, to orchestral rock, they do masterfully. And when I saw him live on the Quadrophenia tour, it was Keith Moon helping the transitions, because they didn't have all the sound effects that are on the albums, and Moon was using cymbals a lot of the time to help them bring them down from this high-energy rock to a melodic ballad piece where they could sing the interlude piece. And I had never seen cymbals used the way Moon used them that night.
Well, it's a jazz approach, and what it means is that Keith Moon is not just a guy who can keep the beat and astonish us with his speed, but he's a musical drummer. And that's one of the things I always liked about him. I always liked that about Carl Palmer and Emerson, Lake, and Palmer, you know, where you have a trio.
Right.
And the drums are such an integral part of the structure of the song, and they are played almost as if there's a melody being provided. But cymbals are a drummer who can use his cymbals effectively is a guy who is a very musical drummer.
Yes, and there's something symbolic about that.
When
we come back, we're going to move on to lead singer and compare Roger Daltrey to the other front men out there in rock. Thank you.